Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
brief podcasts on complex numbers. They're sort of complex because people have made them complex, I suppose. They're complex because they've got two components to it. And what I really want to do is get into what a number is, what a real number is, and try and play around with the word imaginary number. So you've got real and imaginary numbers. So imaginary numbers are numbers which come from the solution of roots of an equation. The square root of minus one is the basic equation. So from that individual one imaginary number, you can get an entire imaginary number system, similar to the way that you can get a number system from say one and in an operation, so 0 plus 1 and the operation plus 1 continue all the way up to infinity, and or subtract 1 go all the way down, divided gets rationals and all things like that. So those numbers which I'm talking about are not actually real numbers. Well, we call them real numbers, but they're not real. So basically the reason, if it can hurt you, if I pick it up and throw it at you and you can get hurt, that's real. And if it can't, if I can't pick it up and I can't throw it at you, it's intelligible. I can work out what it is. So for instance, I could throw a dollar coin at you. Australia's got dollar coins and stuff like that. Now money's not worth what it should be. You get a coin and I throw it at you, it hurts. But if I get a dollar, I can't actually throw a dollar at you. It's a acknowledged conceptual marker. It's a pointer to an idea of what a dollar is. So similarly, the number one is not real, but it refers, we can say it refers to real things. So rather than saying real numbers, numbers that refer to real things, and numbers which don't refer to real things. Now, a number corresponds to an addition, a group law. So in a group, you have a group of something, you have a member of a group, and a law which allows you to create all the other members of a group. So it's a bit like a gang of people at school. That the relationship, the law of membership is that they're a friend of it. So you have various groups and a group operator. So you can get some numbers and a symmetry group. So you can get something and reflect it, and you can get a reflection symmetry group. So you can get all patterns which are you can derive through folding, or you can fold. Derived by folding and flipping is another sort of group. So the real numbers form a group of concept pointers, and a real number can refer to at the end of the line, it can refer to, it's capable of referring to something real. So you can have you can count groups. So a group of cats and a group of dogs, and essentially that group can be of actual cats and actual dogs in a room, and they'll say, well, how many types of animals you have. You can then count one and two, you get two types of animals. You can also get things which you can derive through real processes. So I can get a tire, wrap a string around it, pull it out, and that length of rope is a real length of rope, but ultimately it refers to something which cannot be generated. It's not generated from a rational group of numbers. It's an irrational number. And it's pretty astonishing, I suppose, that happens. And so you've got various, within your group of real numbers, you've got all these things. You've got rational, irrational numbers, transcendental numbers, and you can do all these things to work out. You can actually count numbers. So these are intelligible by the fact that they can ultimately refer to something that you can experience through senses. You know, there is a sensory thing. But there are the idea that a solution to an equation is, by definition, a number. So the square root of 4 is plus or minus 2. So that's so a solution as a process to generate a group of numbers is basically there. So if a mathematical process generates your group, if you have, you can therefore generate a mathematical process which generates a new group. And this is where we come to imaginary numbers. The square root of minus 1, we cannot imagine two physical numbers which add together. We've got to create a mathematical fix to them. So we call those not real numbers, but it's slightly confused. A number refers to a tag of an imagination. So numbers are intelligible by imagination. You know, real numbers are intelligible by imagination. Imaginary numbers cannot be imagined. So there you go. That is by far a really bad sticking point. So if you were not educated and you came in, it's sort of like coming into a conversation halfway through and people are speaking code about someone they don't like and they're using sarcasm and all stuff like that, and you've come in untrained, you come in from dealing with things, you've been conditioned, and someone says, well, look, we're going to call these numbers here imaginary numbers, and we're going to give you a recipe for how they're made, but the one thing you cannot do with an imaginary number is imagine that number. So it's sort of like it means not imaginable from a real object. So you cannot devise a real situation for which you can imagine. You cannot imagine a real. So there are numbers where you can imagine a real situation, and we call those real numbers. But the numbers for which you cannot imagine, you can only use intelligibility. So there's this gap between reality, or the real imaginable, imagination of real, and intelligible. All things are intelligible. I can work them out, except there are some things which it becomes intelligible. And intelligible, obviously, I don't have direct experience. I can do pseudo experience. I can place a pseudo experience to help me to be a placemaker on the way there. But ultimately, it's a mathematical interpretation. Now, just to keep on going on this, just seeing the recording's working here, it's 8 minutes. What I was going to say is that this point is not some sort of fluffy point made by a random podcast guy years and years ago. If you go right back before Plato, before Pythagoras, you get Parmenides. Parmenides said, he said this thing, and people didn't really understand what it said, but it sounded deep. And Parmenides, in that time, people, intelligibility was just such a gone thing that people couldn't speak in concepts. They could only speak in stories. So you can imagine it's very early on. And the earliest story he wanted to say is, look, I was out loud having a beer on a patio, and the sun goddesses turned up and said, hey, Parmenides, want a ride? She said, sure thing. And went up there, went up in the sky chariot, the sun god. Now, obviously, people have said, this is weird, but it's actually linked to a much earlier Babylonian religion. And the sun god said, look, goddess, put her arm around him and said, look, mate, there are things which you can understand if they're intelligible, but they're not imaginable. There's knowledge got that? And that's the one piece of information. So and Paramedes said, don't quite sure what you mean, but I'll write it down. I'll write it down in my poem. And so he only had one thing. He had one poem, and it was a whack poem, but it's going through. So it's sort of strange that it's such a volatile idea of having something which you can access through mathematical intelligibility, but not through experience. That was such a toxic, horrible idea that Parmenides, the very first person writer, saying, you know what, if I say this outright, if I just say, you know, slam the tankard against the table, whatever you had in the Bronze Age, this will give you an idea. This is before the Iron Age. This is pretty ancient stuff. He said, if I say this, I'll be screwed. So I'll put it in a poem. And he's put it across. Now, it comes across to me, years later, having understood that, and then having understood people saying real and imaginary numbers, it's pretty much the same similar thing. People don't want to get to the fact. Real and imaginary allows you to step back, sort of it's wallpapering over the fact that imaginary numbers cannot be imagined. And look, there's been lots of philosophers across have said, you can hear the amount of bird life in Australia has exploded around here, a bit of rain here, it's gone crazy. Okay, so a lot of philosophers have gone into that and they haven't had the intellectual machinery to communicate intelligibility as opposed to being able to imagine things. And it's really important for quantum mechanics because the fundamental object that we draw, we've only drawn half of it. The other half is the complex phase which pulsates around it. And we do have tools that we can use to understand quantum mechanics, but it requires a subtle understanding of, or not, when I say subtle, it's not quite the word, a non-stupid understanding of complex numbers. And the understanding that when I draw a phase on a wave function as a colour, because I'm allowed to do that, if I expertly, basically, it's almost like taking up your landing gear, yeah, I say quantum wave functions don't have colour, I can colour them, and I can colour them in such a way that the colours change with time and phase. I can reanimate, I can re-get up to very close. And so you can actually understand these wave functions by vision, but you've got all these obstacles in the way. One is imaginary numbers are not imaginable. You know, that's one aspect. The representation is not... There's things that you cannot comprehend, but I can put in a pseudo layer for comprehension. So quantum mechanics is asking these questions. Now, if I would say that it may be said, it could be said that the non-imaginary number aspect, the purely intelligible, if it has a real thing, that is, at a certain stage, I might not be able to pick up the class of bears and tigers, right, like that. But sure as hell, those actual things do exist and they can eat me alive. So there's this track down to... You can follow an idea and track it down to a real thing which can hurt you, which is a real thing. And that, I would say, is what Descartes, René Descartes, a sort of a swashbuckling contemporary of Newton, if you can imagine, it's Newton as a dry, sort of horrible person. Descartes was a beautiful person, a hippie. If you can imagine, Descartes was more a hippie, as the Newton more as the Oliver North, he understood something, but he was definitely autistic. I would say, in terms of when he was Newton was a parliamentarian, his great statement contribution to the British way of life is saying, it's drafty in here, could someone please shut the window? You know, he really wasn't really connected in a way, and that's what you really needed there. You needed someone who wasn't connected, who could, being not connected, then hang around, left to his own devices, join the dots. And so I think, to a certain extent, that happened. This didn't happen to Descartes. He wasn't left to his own... He was fully connected, a real rich connected person, and he said this, given my definition of common sense is real numbers. Real numbers are common sense. So I'd say common numbers and beyond common numbers, unusual numbers. But he said that common sense, of all God's gifts, common sense is the most fairly distributed, because forever much of how much one wants it, everyone believes they've got enough of it. Everyone believes they've got enough common sense. Which is sort of the other aspect to this real number thing, is that no matter how poor your number ability is, you always feel comfortable with your numbers. Do you understand? And there's no one who goes around going, oh, I can't solve... Most of the majority of people, if you, in a sense, is what you're worrying about, oh, I worry about being raped, burgled, coup d'etat, running out of money, running out of food. No one says, oh, I'm really worried, I can't solve all the numbers I can't solve these equations. Well, I would, but there's not a box to tick. It's probably in others. And look, that being said, is that story of common sense, is that the sort of toxin of sort of base maths, is that you look at it and you have this self-satisfied feeling, whereas once you go into complex numbers, there's sort of a feeling that, hang on, I cannot understand it. Or once you go into symmetries, once you go into SU3, we're in an SU3 symmetry. This is your block, XY, your block moving up. SU2, SU4 symmetries, or your... I don't know if there's an SU1. I have to think about why there's SU1. You've got all these symmetries. Once you can apply number theory to your theory, once you start counting your theories, which is sort of... That is bizarre. You can actually... I can count the number of types of countable numbers. There's two, and if I mix the two, it's a complex number. Now, the interesting aspect to it is that, having understood it, you can pull back a bit, and you can say, well, look, a complex number is a is a real number and a complex number added together, or it's a real number with a phase angle. So I can convert, I can describe the combination of the two as an angle between the two. Allows us to get our mind into SU2 symmetry. So it's sort of like the quantum world is doubly complex, and people make some real mistakes coming into it. So that's what I have to say. I hope that's clear to you, that numbers, all numbers are imagined. Like two, I can't help myself, they're all imagined, they're all imaginary, but I can, there's a number, I can imagine a real thing with it, that's important, but if it's a number which I can't do a real thing, it's there. I'm just doing a talk on complex numbers. Just the podcast audience. Bye for now.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things. Understand them and tell others. Thanks for listening.